All right, welcome to this week's Comic Roast. As you can probably tell, I'm not the normal host. I am actually Brian, and I'm here with Damian and Chris. Scott is awesome and went to go see Captain America Civil War early, so he's not here, and we will do our best to be entertaining without him. And I'll run through the quick Twitter stuff. Find me on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. You could find Damian on Twitter at Damian Johnston. You could find Chris on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're on Facebook, Review and Roast, blah, 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 podcast, etc. What's all that stuff and so forth.
Jewel, CVS, Walgreens.
Yes. Anyway, this week for the number one, we are reviewing Black Eyed Kids, number one, by Joe Pruitt and Szymon Kudrowski on Aftershock. And we have a few
Not
little...
Black Eyed Peas, but Black Eyed Kids.
Yes. And we have just a couple little topics to go through. And for overrated, underrated, in honor of Chris's whining to me about it for weeks, we're going to finally do Hydrahead record releases. So for the five of you who might have heard of Hydrahead records, you're in for a possible thing.
Hey, Isis was pretty big.
They were never on Hydrahead, though. They're related, though, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's his label, so I mean... Yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
All right, so, gentlemen, how was our week since
we
last
spoke?
Well,
the reason why I wanted to do Hydrahead release was because I've been listening to Isis this whole week.
Got it.
That's why.
So anyway, back to how we are doing since last we spoke. Anything exciting to speak
no.
of?
No. No, I bought comics for the first time in a while.
Nice.
Brian went to a hardcore show on Friday.
That I did.
Oh, that's exciting. What was that?
I went to the Bane 25th anniversary final reunion tour extravaganza part one.
25 years of that band. Oh my god, I can't believe it's been around that long.
No, it hasn't been 25 years.
It's like 20. Okay. 20.
No, it's been 20.
Yeah, you know, only
I mean, that's still crazy.
That's like three Rolling Stones life cycles in hardcore, though.
Yeah.
A hardcore band's life cycle used to be like 2.5 years tops.
Oh, absolutely. Like that felt like forever.
Yeah, I mean, so that happened, and I was there. Ish. I was in the vicinity.
So was I.
That's right. You were there.
And I was bummed that Brian didn't tell me he was going.
Yeah, well, it's a last minute thing, so.
It was like a cheating wife.
Well, you know, if I don't get any at home, I gotta seek it outside of the...
No, I said that move you pulled was like you were cheating on me.
Oh, well. I don't know what to say to that, really.
I'm like, I'm getting ready to go. Zach texts me. Ryder's here. I go, I'm like, what?
I can see like Chris hobbling down the driveway with one pants leg, still wearing pajamas. I'm
yeah.
coming, I'm coming.
I better get over there now.
Anyway, so what comics did you end up getting?
I got that Criminal.
Nice.
And I read it.
Nice, sir. Excellent.
Actually, let me walk over to the little pile here because I just got him today. I took the bus up to go grab the number one.
Get me a fucking peanut butter candy.
No, Butterfinger, man. It's Butterfinger.
Yeah. Anything with chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah, Clark Bar or Butterfinger. It's good choices. Let's see. So I'm selling some records this week. So I was like, fuck it, I'll buy. Spend a few bucks on comics. So I got our number one, of course, which I read. I got the Renalto Jones, the 1%.
Nice.
Yeah, I read that today.
I got a Beast of Burden one shot. If you guys ever read those, they're pretty fun.
I have seen those. Is that Dark Horse or?
Yeah, it's Dark Horse. Okay. It's Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're about like little animals that like solve like house pets and stuff that like cats and dogs who get together and like solve like supernatural stuff. It's a lot of fun. Nice. I would say it's for kids, but then like a bunch of horrible shit happens in them too. And I picked up the last of the last contracts by Ed Brisson.
Oh, the final issue?
Yeah, that four-issue thing.
Did you read the last one? Because I haven't read any of it yet, but I'm going to possibly get the collected edition when it comes out.
I did. I read it. I'm going to have to, I think I'm going to start over. I think enough time went passed between the first, the third one and the fourth one that when everything started happening, I was like, wait, what's going on again? What was the thing? So I spent half of it sort of remembering what was going on. And when it was over, it's one of those endings where you're kind of like, oh, okay, fuck. All right. Like, it's not like satisfying really, but it kind of feels appropriate, but it's definitely not what you would have wanted to have happen. So it's hard to say whether or not I liked it. I think it was probably good, but I don't know if I liked it, if that makes sense.
No, definitely does.
Yeah, so, but I think I'm going to start over. Like, I'll dig up all the issues and read all, just sit down and read all the way through them in one sitting probably and just kind of take it in again. I think that's probably the best way to read that one, like through a collected edition or just once you have them all.
I agree. Chris is going to take 4 years to rant down his list, so I'll let him start now. I know you and Mike Jackson spent hours discussing comic books.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was like, I knew he was into it because he had put some posts up before, like about East of West and stuff, but no, dude, he's like way into it, like we are. Like, he knows all who the artist, the writers, he knows. We're just spitballing back and forth. Have you read this? No. Have you read that? No. Oh, you got to check that out. You got to check this out.
I'm way into his hair right now. I'm thinking that's pretty sweet.
And his ZZ Top beard?
That as well. That hair, ZZ Top beard combo with the little gray coming down the sides.
Him and I were talking the whole time at that this weekend.
Who is this?
It is a guy from the, that was part of our scene in the 90s. He's really from Michigan.
And then he relocated to San Diego, I believe.
Oh, right on.
But he still pops in once in a while and visits. And it's the first time I've seen him in a while, so it was pretty good seeing him.
Nice.
Pretty great, actually. I'll say great. Yeah. Good's not really the appropriate word. Great.
I always liked that dude.
I feel like I missed out.
We would have all had a nice moment of sitting around being 40 years old together.
We had a nice moment of all being 32 again.
Yes. So did you?
But no, it was cool.
Did you read?
What have I read?
Did you read anything that stood out?
I read Postal number 12. That's a really good series. There's some hidden elements within that story. I don't know. I can describe it. I've told you it's what it is. It's about a place called Eden, Wyoming, which is basically a city for ex-cons.
Yes.
To kind of start all over again or whatnot. But I mean, it's basically Australia in the middle, in the middle of the U.S. But besides that, it centers around this character, Mark, who is the son of the mayor of that town, that city. And he's got Asperger's disease, Asperger's. So it's just a real interesting story. So, I mean, things have kind of taken a turn where, like, an FBI agent has actually had his daughter placed within that city for protecting her. But it turns out she's a sociopath.
Huh.
So.
Sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, but the FBI keep a real watchful eye on that town for obvious reasons. So, all right. I mean, basically, the town isn't really run by the convicts. It is, but it isn't.
You may have sold me on the postal.
It's really good, and I'll be honest with you, there hasn't been an issue where I thought it was bad.
Well, I know the next thing I'm looking to hopefully get, and that's the reprint of Scene of the Crime from Brubaker and Phillips, but again, I just gotta get to a manageable level first.
But yeah, if you haven't read it, Damien Postal, it's really a good read. It's a good story. The thing that I'm trying to get at is it seems like there's a lot of elements going on, you know, within this story. Because you throw in that guy that's got Asperger's, you got, you know, the fact that, you know, this town is run by convicts. You actually got the fact that one of the waitresses that the guy Mark is actually kind of got an eye for is working with the FBI, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah, sounds like.
But, like in one of the issues, she goes to see him and, you know, they do stuff. And I don't think it's because she wants to, but I think it's because so he keeps her out of jail, I guess, or so she gets to stay there. But
sounds appealing for for someone.
No. I mean, well, you'd have to read it. But like I said, there's like it seems like in every issue there's something, you know, like you find out that thing in that one issue that, you know, that she her name is I think her name is Maggie. She's a waitress at one of the diners, and, you know, she's obviously meeting with this FBI agent, and it's not that she's meeting him for the first time, but this is like a thing that's been going on, I guess, like once a month or something, but they haven't really delved into what, I guess she's kind of like, wouldn't say a narc, but more of just like an informant of some kind, I guess.
Okay.
Letting them know what's going on within there. But, I mean, they still got, there's... That's not the only FBI agent that's got an eye on it. I mean, they, like I said, the government's watching it. I mean, if there was something like that in this country, I mean, we all know the government would actually have a watchful eye on it, so.
Or they just drop a drone on it and move on.
You know what? That's actually, you know, that's what I'm trying, that's why I keep reading it to find out, because obviously they're keeping it around for some reason. They're keeping it around for some reason, and I, like I said, like the FBI agent had placed his daughter in there for protection, you know, but protection from who?
Right. Speaking of criminal elements, I know you've been dying, so now let's bask in the glory of
criminal.
Your favorite thing in the world.
Yes. Teague Lawless.
You did read it.
President.
There's not going to be any spoilers for anyone involved here.
Damien, you read it, right?
Oh, yeah, I read it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want a fucking Clark bar!
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, dude, how do you like the fact that he humps them and then dumps them?
You've had that locked and loaded since you read it, huh?
Oh, yeah, dude, I've had it locked and loaded. I even sent the text to Brian the day after. I just said, humps him and dumps him, and he didn't even reply back.
Well, I mean, having read the other stuff from that series, I mean, it's not like a shock or anything.
No, it's what, not, but it's...
What was a surprise was how sad that final story was. I mean, it was really a story about people's inability to connect, and that was like kind of surprising, because that series is so, you know, it's kind of set in this world where it's not really like
right, because he asked his father, he goes, I thought you said you liked her, and he goes, I did, but she had a big mouth.
Well, just no, that like none
he
of the
say that though.
No, I know, but none of the stories
but
are
I'm
about
just, I'm just drawing on your comment about people's inability to connect, and I think that's a good sign of someone's inability to connect. And not connect, really. Yeah, I liked her, but she had a big mouth, so I got rid of her. I'm like, okay, so...
See, to me, the one that really stuck out as far as Teague Lawless goes was when the kid was saying that, you know, he ended the night by getting drunk, talking about Vietnam, and crying himself to sleep. I'm like, man, these are some, like, devastated people in this story. Like, the kid is obviously on the fast track to being screwed up. That little girl is, like, screwed up, just, like, reaching out to anyone within arm's reach for a friend because, like, nobody seems to like her. And, you know, this waitress who's just, you know, in this small town and has no hope of getting out. And then you have Teague Lawless, who's got this crazy violent streak but also has this dark thing that just kind of holds him down at night. That's like, it was unexpected, because everything else in that story is even within the realm of your, like, you know, small-time criminal type story, and this, like, really got into the psyche of a guy who's really, he's not in anything, he's not a top guy in some organized crime outfit, he's just kind of a hood, so to speak.
You know what I like about this story is the fact of Brubaker picking just this one moment, this one infinite time in both their lives. It's not like a significant one. It's just like, okay, if someone was going to like if I was going to have a story written about me and someone just happens to pick, okay, well, I'm going to pick the part where you went shopping for a whole day.
Yeah, he could have ended it like on this 100
bullets.
It could
have been any part of that of their lives together, but he picked a part where they're like going from one small town to another small town. So not much was really happening.
Yeah, he could have went 100 bullets with a house burning down and a giant shootout, but he kind of ended like on a dull note, which actually
didn't turn out to be dull.
Well, no, it did, because I mean, it ended up with the kid and the dad in a hotel room. And that was kind of that. It just fades to black, which
right.
kind of made me love it.
Yeah, it feels really mature, that storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always said about people, like, because when Brian and I were at the show, we're talking a lot about it, and that was the one thing that I kept saying. I'm like, some of our friends were asking, like, well, that wanted to get into comics, like, which one should I read? Which one should I start? I'm like, start with criminal. I'm like, if someone asked me, like, when I think of criminal, I think of an adult. That's an adult comic. That's an adult story. And when I don't mean like what sometimes what other mediums might think of when they rate something as adult, like, you know, that there's nudity and, you know, there's all this. I'm just saying, like, just the language and like and the some of the emotions that are involved within that story are all adult.
Yeah,
like no kid's gonna grasp it, really. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's got a level of sophistication.
Yeah, yes, exactly. There, that's the perfect word I could think of. You know, like when someone like you or Brian and I read it, and you know, like the fact that Tracy Lawless was in the hotel room by himself for what, like 2 nights. Not knowing where his dad was.
Yeah, the kid is super self-aware, which is
right.
really
yeah.
tragic too. Because I tell that's from a survival instinct. You know, he's not.
Yeah.
Just...
Well, he's not. He's young enough. He's young, but he's not that young that he's not oblivious to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's like he knows his dad's out. So.
And
you know.
That, like, that whole sequence where him and that girl are, like, hanging out and the kid's wrestling with this thing where his dad's like, don't make friends, don't talk to anybody that can remember you. And it's like he's trying to obey his father, but at the same time he's desperate to have some kind of relationship with anyone. And, yeah, that's just, like, it's just it kind of reminds you of, like, some moments when you're a kid yourself and you kind of feel like, man, I don't have anyone, and you're like dying to just be friends with anyone, just to like get through that moment in life, you know. And just to think about that kid doing that on a daily basis has got to be just totally heart-wrenching. That's what I'm saying. Like, it was surprisingly sad,
mm-hmm.
but in like a really good way, though.
Yeah, you're just watching someone become more and more lost, and it's just. Yeah, it was intense. It was a great issue. It's a good. I mean, it's a nice standalone thing. Like you could almost introduce somebody to the series even with that. Even though the series has gone on for so long, it's just. I think it's tight, and I mean, it would throw people off a little bit with the werewolf stuff in there, but
the werewolf thing was kind of played off the whole inability to connect too, because there's this kid who's like turning into a werewolf and he just wants to have a girlfriend and he can't because he can't go out at night because he turns into a werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. It's a cool compliment to that.
Nah,
but I mean, but I wouldn't want people to think that's why the comic is constantly. But
right,
it's I actually started getting kind of into the Kung Fu Werewolf story too. Like, oh no, he's got to beat Mystico. It's like, what? Well, no, it's like this one page of a comic that doesn't exist.
Oh man, I think we've just depressed everybody.
Yeah. I think we just reviewed it.
Yeah, we definitely did.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna give it a 10.
Yep.
Yeah, sure. Sounds great.
That's what I was gonna say.
All right,
I guess if you want to do the real review now.
Yeah, I guess we'll do the actual number one, which is Black Eyed Kids. Like I said, it's by Joe Pruitt and Szymon Kudranski from Aftershock. We've done kind of a lot of these Aftershock books since they started coming out. Let's see. I'll just kind of give you the brief synopsis. There are these kids, and they have black eyes. And I don't know. It didn't really specify if this is a small town or a big city or a medium city, but seems like the entire story takes place at night, and there's this brother-sister, and they live in a house with their mother and stepfather, and the brother keeps barging into the daughter's room and staring out the window creepily, saying, they're coming, and doesn't really get into what's coming, and it looks to be that the black-eyed kids are coming, and they kind of resemble like a Children of the Corn sort of duo, and yeah. There's some dark criminal type activity that takes place and some supernatural activity involved, and it looks kind of like they're going around recruiting in a weird demonic sort of way, and that's kind of all I got. There really wasn't much here.
No, it was eerie. I mean, I guess it had one goal, which was to be intriguing, and I guess I was kind of intrigued. But yeah, it's like a very light sort of supernatural horror comic, and yeah, it was interesting.
Chris,
it's like Children of the Corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost wonder if this was like some weird supernatural kind of elongated route to finding a way to talk about gun violence, but maybe that's just me reading into it too much.
It's possible. I mean, again, there's not a lot in there, so it's kind of hard to know exactly what's happening.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it did have like an 80s horror movie vibe to me.
Mm-hmm. Like
little Children of the Corn, maybe Halloween thrown in there.
Definitely.
We talked about The Fix and how it was very dialogue heavy. This is almost without dialogue almost throughout.
Yeah, really, really slight.
Other than that, I mean, that's kind of all.
I thought it was fine. I don't think they really gave you too much to go off of, really. That's one of my little pet peeves with comics. I still like, you know, just maybe a little bit of backdrop. I don't feel like it. Like, it feels like someone, like, I just got dropped off by an alien ship, you know, after them testing on me for, like, about 20 years. And they just plop me anywhere, and then that's it. And I'm like, okay. Great. Yeah. No, well, that's kind of how I feel. It's like I feel like when I'm reading this, it's like they just slap you in the middle of what's going on.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, they've put you in the middle of this situation that you're just a spectator to, obviously. And without telling you anything, you're just watching events unfold before you.
Well, I was going to say, actually, this review is going the way of that issue when there's really nothing being said. But also, I was going to say, usually...
Well, I'm trying to give the listeners, like,
an
idea of how I felt, like, when I read it. I don't know how you guys felt about it. Did you feel that way? I mean, that's...
Well, that's where I was going to go, was that you often will say that, you know, I wish they'd give me a little bit more, and most of the time I'm like, no, I'm kind of good where what they gave. I don't want to have too much already. You know, I want to spread it out. This was one issue. I was like, man, I would really be happy with more, because there's almost nothing here. I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
That's going to be different. Sorry, go ahead, Damien.
No, I was going to say, I mean, it did a good job of setting a mood, but, I mean, I didn't get a very good sense of, you know, time or place, and obviously, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, I didn't care so much about the characters by the end of it enough for me to be like, oh, I gotta check this out, because there is no characters. I mean, there's nothing. There's just some. There are characters, but there's nothing revealed about any of them. And then the ones that even make it through the end of the first issue. And so it's just kind of a more of a mood and a setting kind of, you know, comic, I feel like, as far as, I mean, you know, there's a lot of times first issues are just exposition, and there was no exposition either. This was purely setting and tone, and that was fine. But I don't know if it's enough for me to go back to the next one.
Yeah, I
would say that you just pretty much summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, the $2 price tag is pretty sweet, but...
That's pretty much what it was. It was just a setting. It was just – that's exactly how I felt. Like they put you – they've – you know, you've been gone for so many years, and you just get put into the middle of this situation that's going on, this setting, and you're looking at it, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, what's
going on? What's up with the black eyes?
I think
I mean, I like a slow burn, but I feel like this is like exceptionally slow, and it's hard to. I think it's hard to pull that off when you have something that's episodic.
Well, I think it was done intentionally. I don't think it was done on, you know, like, I don't think it was just happened. I think that was the whole. I think that was the writer's purpose. Like, he's like, hey, I'm just going to lay out this setting.
Yeah, I felt like they thought they could pull you in with the intrigue of knowing absolutely nothing, and.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I felt like you said, being dropped into a desert, and you just see a guy walk by, and then 10 minutes, and then a tumbleweed goes by, and then another 10 minutes, and then a guy shoots into nothing and shrugs his shoulders and walks away, and then that's it. And you're like, I don't know what I just saw, but it wasn't really awesome. Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't a bad issue, and I mean, I guess everyone's going to have like a different outlook, you know, like, so for some, I would imagine for some people that would work. Oh yeah, this is a real cool setting, man. I want to see what else happens. It could work.
Maybe.
Does it work here?
Didn't work for me.
No.
It's good. Yeah. I'm half on the fence, half not. You know, like
I'm
read it and I was like, yeah, this was fine. I'm like,
I've hopped the fence, kept on walking. Gone home, got in the car, went to the store, came back home, put the groceries away, and went to bed.
I mean, it's no fit. It's not the fix, I'll tell you that.
It is definitely not the fix.
No, it definitely needs to be fixed, but now I guess that depends on who you are. Yeah.
I mean, this may really like be something where if when it's collected, like people might be like, oh my god, you guys didn't like that, it's so good. It's like, well, yeah, if you get to read it all at once, that might be a completely different story, but... from what we're given here, like, this is all I got.
Hey, the first 20 pages, dude, is yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
I will say, like, it only being $2 is kind of nice, and that's a good way to pull people in. If anyone's interested in checking it out, especially if you're into like 80s horror or something like that, check it out and maybe let us know let me know if it gets, you know, cool or bad or interesting or even what's happening.
Yeah. I'm off the train, and like I said, I'm done with this one. This was about the most boring thing I've read in a while, so
I mean, other than that, the artwork and the colors and everything, they all set the mood perfectly.
Oh,
yeah, it was nicely drawn.
The artwork was fantastic. The writing, I didn't know if there was any really.
It was I liked all the grays and blacks and purples and blue. I mean,
oh yeah, no, it was nice.
It was
very,
there wasn't a bright color in there. So I mean, it totally set the mood. And, you know, it was cold. It was dark. It was. I thought that was fine, but like I said, I'm like, you know, maybe hint at why these kids are here, you know, a little bit. You don't have to, you don't have to let the whole kid out of the bag. I mean, some people can do that. They could put a setting out like that and, you know, and it works.
I think that's just the problem is that, we're looking for a first episode, first issue of a story, and we haven't got the story yet. I had some issues with myself, so But I can number it whenever you guys want, because I think I'm I'm just start hating it all of a sudden. I didn't hate it. Like,
like, damn it.
Yeah,
and $2 I could have bought something else.
No, yeah, you're right. I was disinterested to the point where I don't have the energy to hate it. So I'm going to give it a 5 because it looks nice. And it's, you know, it's a nice looking piece of paper.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Five's right in the middle. It means it did its job of being a comic, and
it did its job of having staples in the middle. Yeah, it had staples in the middle and it folded in half. That works.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go with a 7. I don't think it was that bad. I mean, it was. I would have liked more.
You always want more, though.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I wish I would have got a little bit more.
I don't want the whole plot given to me, but you have to give something to keep me coming back.
No, in this instance, I agree with you. Oftentimes I'm like, nah, I don't need that much in the beginning. I'm good, you know, building with each successive chapter. But this time I'm like, this feels like a issue negative one.
When you have something like that with people with, you know, just black eyes, you know, just blackness within, you know, almost like zombies, you're like, okay, well, why are they like that?
That's another thing, too. This title's so on the nose.
Yeah, that's
it's
weird.
Like the book was called Giant Sandwich, and it was just a big sandwich, like, sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, the name being so on the nose, it would be, like, it would seem like it would have a little bit more humor into it, I guess, or be a little, like, I don't know, like, more self-aware, maybe, you know, in a cool way. Like, it seemed like the title didn't really go with
right. It was almost like he was like, I'm just going to call it Black Eyed Kids, but it's actually going to be super serious.
Yeah. And then when you have, like, and then we've seen, like, the black eye effect a million times in other types of things, like X-Files and, I think, Game of Thrones and, you know, Grimm or whatever. Like, I've seen that, like, effect of, like, someone whose eyes turn completely black a ton of times. So that's not enough to really drag me in. Like, if that's what's supposed to be, you know, intense, then that's, you know, I've kind of seen it before.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I'm going to give it a 7. It might actually turn out to be something good, but
well, then you
that probably won't be for like another couple issues, though.
You are free to continue.
Yeah, let me know. I'll say 6. I did not dislike it, and I thought the art was quite nice. There you go.
All right.
Hey, dude, can you? I gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, it's one of those.
One. All right. Anyway, so I guess now we could talk about the cost of Free Comic Book Day, because that affects all three of us not at all.
That's true.
Unless, of course, you drive really far to a comic book store and they tell you you can only take one issue, and it's, you know, the choice between the next World of Aspen sampler and My Little Pony, then I guess it's a large cost.
I was about to say, dude, like, all the stuff that they ever have for Free Comic Book Day stinks.
Yeah, you know, more or less. You're more or less right.
I mean, it's cool. It's a cool idea and everything, but I mean, I know it's probably catered more to, like, kids instead.
Yeah, my daughter loves it.
Than the weird old grown-ass man like us.
Yeah, I go because the shops that I go to, they usually discount everything in the store for the day. So it's a reason to get something cheaper than normal. And just, you know, see weirdos I don't always get to see. Because there are people I run into in there, like, from time to time that I just know by face or whatever. And then chances are you're going to see them in there and be like, hey, all right, criminal rules. Boom. But yeah, I remember the first year I even heard of it, I was like super pumped, and I got there and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever, oh my god. And then I got all the books home and I read them, I'm like, it's all right. I'm like, I got some stuff on sale, that was cool, I guess. And each successive year, it's like, I always, like, for the next couple of years, I would like make a big plan for it, and then I'd get there and then I'd remember, oh yeah, it's just okay. I was looking forward to this year because, you know, I wanted to bring my nephews, but they got other stuff, so they're not going to go. Well, I just thought it was weird reading this story about like how much money it costs for one of these shops just to participate, though.
Yeah, it's expensive. I mean, they're paying, you know, around 25 cents a comic, it said, and then they had to ship like hundreds of pounds, which is never cheap.
And
you know,
you
try to pack them in flat rate boxes, it's still super expensive.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of the story here is if you're going to go, buy some stuff and be that, you know, small owner. I got nothing.
Don't be the dude that goes in there looking for 10 issues to get for free and that's it.
There was one year a few years back where Arkea did a really cool like mini hardcover of Mouse Guard. And they probably spent well over 25 cents a book to get these printed. I mean, it was a really, really nice little, you know, book for Free Comic Book Day, and they haven't done it since, but that was the one thing I remember seeing, because I remember when I saw it, I was, like, really excited. I wanted to get it for my nephew, and I gave it to him, and I think he threw it around, and it's probably in the dumpster somewhere now, so that was a lot of effort for nothing.
Yeah, no, my daughter loves it. I've mentioned a million times that my store just moved, so it's no longer like my wife used to come home on Saturday and grab the girls and walk them down there, and they just get to go through and pick out whatever. And the shop's always really cool to my kids, and I'm like, I'll take as much as you want. We don't care. You guys are in here every week, like go nuts. And they always have like, you know, food, like a food truck will pull up, and they have free beer from like one of the breweries around here. My neighborhood's like filled with breweries, so they'll like sponsor it for them. So the grownups will have free beer, and they'll have like face painting for the kids, and it's a huge thing. A bunch of artists come down. It's a really fun day. But yeah, the shop's like, you know, they put so much into that. It's like to them, it's almost like a way to drag in all these people who are like, you know, passively maybe care about comics or don't really do that. And I love they do that. The shop down the street that I started going to. Since mine moved, it's a little farther away, but Miles Grab is going to be there.
Oh wow!
Free Comics Day, signing after the Gold Rush stuff and talking about that, and you know they have tons of cool stuff for the kids.
There was one story that the guy at the shop that we go to told me is one year for Free Comic Book Day they had Brian Azzarello do a signing, and. I'm sure most people know Brian Azzarello from 100 Bullets and First Wave and American Monster, etc.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
But it was one of those things where they brought all these, you know, moms brought their little kids, and the kid just sees comic book creator. They don't really know. So this little kid goes up to Azzarello's table and like, can you draw me a horse? And he looked at the kid like, I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen Brian Azzarello or like watched an interview with him? He's really like not the most jovial person from what I recall. Like I met him once and, you know, I was like, oh my God, I love your books. I'm like, your stuff's really great. And he's just kind of like, yeah, that's cool. And signed it. And he's like, next. All right. And I've watched interviews with him and he's just so like, he seems almost like irritated to talk to anybody. And,
just found a picture of him.
Yeah. He's like, he's not like Captain Happy and you know, anything of the sort. Maybe that's why he writes all these really violent stories, but, some kid is like, can you draw me a horse? And he like stared at the kid like, I don't know what to do here. And they're like, can you just draw a horse for this kid and just sign it? Cause he has no idea you're not an artist. So he's just like, okay. So he grabbed a piece of paper and he drew like a stick horse and he just wrote Brian and he handed it to the kid. And apparently the kid was like, oh my God, it's the greatest thing ever. But he thought he was for a minute going to get like an actual horse. And he's just got a stick horse with Brian Azzarello's signature. I'm like, that actually would be valuable to somebody, and that kid has no idea, and it's going to end up in the dumpster. Everything's going in the dumpster today. I was talking about me ending up in the dumpster today at work. A fascination with the dumpster all of a sudden.
Do you know, I don't know if you guys know, but do you know he's married to Jill Thompson?
Yes.
Who's that?
Artist. She does Scary Godmother. She's like Sandman. She's the one who did that Beast of Burden that I just picked up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Didn't
she
also
does like a lot of watercolor kind of painting comics.
Didn't she do House of Mystery for a bit?
Probably, yeah. I know she did Run of Sandman. She definitely did. Gosh, what else did she do? She did a lot of stuff. She's been. Let's see, I'll look up real quick. She did a run of Wonder Woman for a while in the 90s. Yeah, Run of Sandman. Black Orchid, that other Neil Gaiman thing. She had issue of Swamp Thing. Man, a bunch of stuff. A lot of stuff like Neil Gaiman related. Looks like she had a run of on Sirius for the Scary Godmother stuff. Yeah, she's got a ton of stuff. She's got a huge bibliography here.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I remember her from mostly. I'm surprised she's never done anything with her husband. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it seems like that would be pretty easy to do.
Yeah. Anyway.
Maybe they'd like to keep that separate.
Yeah, it's possible. I know they did some stuff for, or she did some stuff for WWE at one point as well. I think his CM Punk actually brought her in, though.
Oh, really?
Well, he's from Chicago, and he's a big comic book guy, so. And I've listened to interviews with him, and he's dropping, like, Ed Brubaker and Jonathan Hickman, so I was like, oh, okay, he's not really some guy that's like, oh, I found Thor in the movies, and now I'm a fan. He's kind of into it, I guess.
Huh, that's cool.
So I think he actually might even be friends with him. Anyway.
And the fact that he dropped those two names is actually pretty good in my book.
I don't disagree. All right, we're going to move into over-under. Like we said, we're kind of trying to do a little shorter episode this week as opposed to a two-plus-hour one. Anyway, this one Chris has been dying to do. It's Hydrahead Records releases. For those of you who are not familiar, Hydrahead was a label that existed somewhere between the mid to late 90s till about early 2010s.
Still kind of going here and there, not really. It's defunct, sort of.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, they still do reissues.
They do they're not, I don't think they're doing anything new.
Like, every so often, I feel like something new comes out.
Yeah, they've
randomly
said that, like, they're not doing anything anymore new. But then they're like, hey, here's this reissue of this. I'm like, okay, well, technically it's not new, but I should ask Mark Thompson about that.
But yeah, if you're not familiar, they're kind of responsible for bands like Keel Hall, Zozobra, Pelican, Cable, I guess. Not really.
Name the good ones, dude.
I'm just going off the top of my head here. Let's see. Cave-In.
Drowning Man.
Jesuit. Okay.
Botch.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to do...
Cave-In.
I said Cave-In already. So anyway, I'll start with Overrated. Chris is going to cry, and too bad. My pick for Overrated is actually Cave-In Until Your Heart Stops.
Oh, come on, dude.
Yep.
You could have picked Jupiter of all things.
I've never heard that album. When it comes to Until Your Heart Stops, for me, at this point, I used to love that album. But at this point, all those segues just hurt my brain. And
I could see that.
It feels like five songs and like six segues and I don't know. What did it for me was seeing them live a few times. I had a picture in my head of what they were going to be like live, and then what it ended up getting was vastly different. So, and then other records that have come out have just surpassed it for me. So, the artwork is amazing, though.
Most of the releases are on his label.
No, that one's particularly good, though.
Yeah, I don't know if Jake Bannon did that, or I want to say he did.
That I don't know.
Yeah, he might have. I don't know.
I'd have to pull it out. It's behind me, and I don't feel like digging it out.
I'm actually not a huge fan of that record myself. So
really? Oh, dude.
I think I came to them way too late. Like,
dude, when I first heard that record, dude, I wanted to run my head through a brick wall. And actually, when I first heard it, because I had heard things about them, and like I was with Jason Gagowski and I think I was at Adam Bishop's. I think Extinction was doing some practice or something like that, but it was only with Niraj and Adam and Jason Gagowski, and we're talking about it, and I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I keep hearing about this band, and I'm like, I've never heard anything about them. And Jason Gott's like, dude, you haven't heard anything yet? Fucking A, bro, let's go to my car.
Yeah, he said that about Ricochet, though, so you can't really trust Jason Gagoski's opinion on music because he likes everything.
So he goes and plays it for me, and I'm just like, holy fucking shit. And, like, when I first heard them, I seriously thought it was dudes with long hair, like, all in black. That's how I pictured them.
All I'm saying, if somebody told me that Jason Gagoski said, dude, you got to hear the new Nickelback, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds like Jason. He likes every band. It doesn't count. You can't like every band. But he does, or at least he used to.
Well, he was on the money on this one.
All right.
For me, because when I first heard it, I was like, holy shit, dude.
I like Jason. He's a good guy. Just think about that guy.
He just sent me a text like a couple of days ago. He's like, dude, you like red hair? I'm like, yeah, I have the record. Why are you asking? He's like, I'm just making sure, dude.
Weird.
I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, dude, are you high right now? He's like, I probably should be.
Awesome.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, there you go. Okay. My overrated? That's easy. Pelican. Pick one. I don't care. All of them.
I left that one for you because I knew.
Fucking A, dude. I haven't even, you know what, and I haven't even heard any of their records, and I can tell you right now that they are overrated, and I don't even need to hear them to know that they're overrated.
I'll tell you, the first EP is really good, and that's all I'll say about that band.
Except for, like, Larry, and who else was in the band?
Larry, Trevor, Larry's brother, Laurent used to be the guitar player, and now some other guys, and I have no idea.
Well, Larry and his brother.
Yeah, super nice guys. Such an old band are super cool dudes, but my old band did a split with them, actually.
That's right. They
did Jason
on his label.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yep, on his label. I was just about to say, on Hawthorne Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't pick them for a number of reasons, so I just decided to let that one go.
It's funny, I didn't even think about them. I have the records. I don't dislike them.
I will
much,
wholeheartedly pick them.
Yeah, I'll say their second LP, though. There's a thing on that record that bugs me so much to this day, where Larry does this thing where he hits the rims of this toms. It drives me crazy. I don't know why they decided to do that. It's not that's necessarily always a bad idea. It just really didn't work. Really painfully didn't work. And I feel like it's a song they held on to for a long time. Because I saw them, they play here all the time, so I go see them and hang out and stuff. But yeah, not really my band. Like I said, I really love that first EP a lot. That was really cool to hear when it first came out. It was totally different than any of the other things they did. And everything else they did after that, it was kind of it's okay, I guess. It's kind of like Isis without any singing. And not really a giant Isis fan anyway, so...
Really?
I like him. I mean, I don't dislike him. Isis is someone that I like. I like Aaron. I think all stuff's awesome. I think Oceanic's a killer record in general. And I think all of them are really good.
I love the Red Sea.
It's just nothing I really ever put on. I think, again, I kind of came to it a little later. When Isis first came out, people used to call him Neurisis. Because it was just, so close to Neurosis. And they used to actually do, Isis would even do, the Tom thing at the end of their set. Neurosis had been doing for, 15 years before that. There's just a lot of that, obviously wearing their influences on their sleeve thing. But, as time went by, I thought they got pretty good, but then the last few records are pretty rock and roll. Just wasn't, I don't know. They never really fully clicked with me. There's some really cool shit at the beginning, though. Signal 5 is killer. Pelican, I just kind of felt like they're always sort of in the shadow of Isis.
I honestly never listened to an entire record. I've heard a song here or there. I don't get it. And I have other, less admirable reasons. So, again, and nothing against the people in the band. Like, I was friends with them at one time. It's just kind of, you know, just it's like a little sour grapes for me. So, that's okay. Pretty much it.
Okay. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Well, I was actually going to say Bitter by Cave In, actually.
Yeah.
I don't like that record at all. I really wanted to like it. That song Big Riff. It's a great riff. Starts out great, but like I just don't like it. I don't like his voice. I don't like the approach to the songs. I just don't like it.
It almost felt like intentional.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, yeah, we just put out Until Your Heart Stops. Let's be real.
Yeah, you know,
D-I-C-K-Y heads, and you know, let's do this. It's kind of cool in the way when you think about it at first. It's like, yeah, you know, like, hey.
Well, yeah, I mean, then, but you know, for me, it was like I didn't really like that first Cave In record that much either. So, either. It wasn't to me like, oh, I really love this first one, but I couldn't get into the second one. It's like, I didn't really care about the first one. So when the new one came out, a lot of my friends were like, oh, if you didn't like that first one, you're gonna love Jupiter. I was like, oh, okay, cool, I'll check it out. And I got it. I was like, no, I don't love this. What kind of music do you guys think I like?
And you know what? I'm gonna let that slide. And you know why, Damien? Because you were part of a band that crushed all those bands.
Said Child.
You know what? I went back and listened to that thing, and I'll just keep my opinion to myself.
Oh, I mean, it sucks shit. I mean, you can say whatever you want.
But no, you were part of Kiss a Goodbye.
Oh,
and as
yeah.
far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure Brian will agree with me on this one, too.
I like to Kiss a Goodbye.
Yeah, what I was going to say is when you look at it in hindsight, it's like Kiss a Goodbye almost kind of crushes anything Hydrahead put out.
they got asked to be on Hydrahead.
That would have that fit would have made sense. Truthfully.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of good releases on Hydrahead, but I'm just saying, like.
Well, I don't know why they didn't do it. At the time, they were like, "We're going to go with Rev because we think they'll give us better tours." It's like, well, first of all, they won't, and you guys are dummies for doing it. Because before I was in Kiss Goodbye, I lived with them, and they were in the process of signing, and we were trying to tell them, like, no, do the Hydrahead thing, because this is such a relevant label, and it has a built-in fan base, and you guys will be able to basically write your own ticket soon. And they're like a tiny label, though. Like, Rev's huge. They got money behind it. They'll send us to, you know,
yeah,
fly
but the people that
and...
are into Hydrahead stuff are into what you guys are.
Yeah, it's... They buried themselves on a label. It was they thought they were making a good business choice because they had been like so burned with some of the stuff they had done in the past, like Die 116 and all this stuff that didn't work out the way they thought it would. And it didn't work out for them. So they chose to go with a more established label, which, you know, in some levels makes sense, but it did not pan out for them. They got like a tour with Obituary that they got kicked off of. They got a tour with Unsane. And that was really good, I guess, for them. But that was it. And then the band basically imploded. And then I joined to try to, like, salvage it. We did one record with 1/7 inch with Rev. And then we broke up, you know. And that was it. I mean, that 7-inch was supposed to be in Sub Pop. Then we broke up, and Sub Pop didn't want to do it anymore. So it came out on Rev. And that was it.
It doesn't matter, because your name is still on the record.
Thank you. Yeah, I did
you
draw
played,
everything
You played the
on
songs.
That.
Yeah, I know you did.
So you, that was fun.
At least you were at one point in the band.
Yeah, I am.
Even if Tim Singer said, hey, Chris, do you want to be in Kiss a Goodbye? You're not going to play any shows, but we'll put your name on the record at least. And you'll record with us. I'd be like, yes!
We have derailed.
I am Sorry. Yes,
no.
We don't need to talk about Kiss a Goodbye.
No,
done
just,
with hardcore.
This guy's just going to like gush over himself for the next hour. Underrated. This might be a weird choice, and I have gotten some flack from a few people for picking this record in the past, but I don't care because I love it. Cable Gutter Queen. Don't really love the first album on Doghouse all that much, and every subsequent album has been hit or miss. Like, they tried to do the hillbilly rock thing for a minute, and I like it. Then the record that came after was just okay. Then the last thing they did on The End Records, which I believe was called The Failed Convict, was awesome. Probably the best album they've done since Gutter Queen, but Gutter Queen just such a great record. I like that one song where they just stop playing music and the singer's just screaming into the microphone, "What the fuck are you looking at?" I'm like, "Oh my god, I love this thing." Then that song, what's that song? She Is Here. It's just basically like three chords on like a guitar, and he's just kind of mumbling into the microphone. I don't know why I love that song so much, but I do. And then the Black Sabbath cover, Planet Caravan. I just love that album. It's so angry and dirty sounding. It's so good. It's like
the cover alone. The photo they have pretty much sums up that title pretty good.
Yeah, like the cover's got this woman who looks like a drugged out
heroin addict.
Yeah, and that record sounds like heroin to me. Like just what heroin, if you were strung out on heroin. No, like if you were just strung out on heroin and like rolling around in a gutter, and that's what that record sounds like. So good.
It sounds like nights fueled by heroin, Jack Daniels, and sewers.
And a knife fight in an alley.
With a hillbilly prostitute.
I agree.
That's actually a very good underrated pick. It is an underrated record because Variable Speed Drive on Doghouse is
it's okay. It just kind of sounds like a
Gutter Queen is kind of like when they came into their own.
To me, Variable Speed Drive sounds a little Threadbare-y, whereas that record is when they kind of started transitioning into more of like a, for a lack of better term, stoner rock band, even though I don't really think that's what they were going for necessarily.
Northern Failures is awesome, though.
Oh, yeah, that was a good record, too. I forgot about that thing.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Those guys rule.
All right, my turn then, right? Okay. I can't pronounce the name, so Damien, you're going to have to help me. K-N-U-T.
Oh, Knut.
Bastardizer. Ugh.
Yeah, that's good.
And
man.
Challenger. Both of them.
Yeah, I think you were like texting me at work like 2 years ago, like nonstop for like an hour. Dude, check out Nut. And I'm like, or Knut, whatever. And I was like, all right, fine. I remember I put it on. I was like, oh, this is pretty awesome. I'm like, all right.
Yeah,
and you never said it. Because why? Because you didn't want me to say I told you so?
No, because I was working and I had
You probably just
to
didn't
do.
Want to hear me blab on about it.
And I was working.
That record is so tough. Tough on like a, not like a tough guy kind of thing, but more tough like you just want to strangle someone. It makes you want to strangle cats.
Everything is strangling and sexual.
I didn't say it was anything like that. That record is far from being...
Oh, I know what you're saying.
S-C-X-U-A-L. It's just... I don't know. It's a really good record. I like the guy's voice. I like everything about the band. That's just an awesome record. I don't think too many people know about it. That's a shame. And the fact that they came from Switzerland makes it even better. And my son is moshing, circle pitting in the basement.
Did you guys see him the one time they came here on tour?
No.
Just don't tell me, because if I find out that they did play somewhere near this realm that I live in, I'm going to be very upset with myself.
And I know they played someplace in Indianapolis. It was like a swimming pool or something that shows.
Oh, man. That would have ruled. I would have came with like an inner tube or some kind of floaties and...
It was in 2001. It was with ISIS. They were opening for ISIS. They didn't... I don't think Jay came all the way here because I would have seen him at that point, and I did not, so... Or I might have been on tour when they came through here.
That record is awesome. From start to finish, not a bad song. Love it.
Nice. I'm into it.
I knew you would be.
That's a good one. So my underrated, I'm actually picking it because I think it's actually an underrated record. Not necessarily my favorite record on a Hydra Head, although I think it's quite good, is the Mare EP. I really like that record.
You? What's that one called?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I know I listened to it, and I thought I was like, it's... All I know is that the cover's like white or something.
Yeah, it's got like a cityscape on it or something. I think it's self-titled. It's just an EP, four songs.
Is that the name of the band?
Mare, M-A-R-E.
Yeah, is that the name of the band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a three-piece, and I really like the record a lot. It's got some interesting approaches to music. It's definitely a little more experimental than a lot of the other stuff, but then seeing them live really cemented it to me, because there's singing parts on the record. The guy who plays guitar and sings is a really good singer, and they do all that stuff live, and it's great. The drummer is like this little kid who just blazes. He's such a killer drummer. Make a lot of really strange choices, and I think that's what I really liked about it. Like, experimental is not exactly the term. I just say it's very unconventional for that sort of music. It's from a guy who was in a band called The End, which I'd never heard before, but apparently they were Canadian and good. I don't know. I was really looking forward to Mare doing a full length and seeing like what they did when they had a. When they had like an entire record to sort of like fill up and explore and expand. I guess it just seemed like, I think that EP, like I said, it's not my favorite record, but it has so much potential to me. And they just like dissolved as a band. Apparently there's just a lot of personal issues. They were never able to keep a bass player in the band. Like, they kept having to get new guys, because I think people just didn't really, I think the singer, I mean, they stayed with me. They seem like really sweet guys, but apparently like working with the singer can be a little difficult. So I think he just kind of, it just never really worked out. I think they did a Melvins cover was the only other thing they ever recorded. And I've never looked for it because I don't really care. So, but yeah, that's mine. I know it's definitely not for everyone, but I still listen to that thing probably every other week or so.
You know, actually, now that you mention it, I had one of the albums by that band, The End, and I cannot remember what I did with it.
Yeah, I never heard him. I heard the guy had a really killer voice. That's what people liked about that band, is the guy's like screaming voice was awesome. But I've never heard it. I can't speak to it.
I think I liked it for a minute, and then I just decided I didn't anymore. So I think
what record?
The End. Were they on Relapse?
Yes, I think they were. I think they're kind of part of that sort of hyper-technical Dillinger
Suffocation
sort of world.
Yeah, okay, then I definitely had that album for at least a little bit. Yeah, if it came out.
There was that period in the 2000s where everyone was doing that fucking Dillinger Escape Plan thing.
Yeah, there was that band Ed Gein and Dillinger, obviously. And okay, yeah, I definitely had that record at one point. I may have even had their other record as well. Stop it. But I didn't stick with it, I don't think. I got rid of a lot of my records, though, because I needed the money. Anyway. All right. Real quick, I guess we could just do Best Thing Ever, and then... What was that?
Wasn't that, me.
No, it's my daughter. She's she's starting to lose it. What's somebody's best thing ever? So I can think of one.
Mine actually was going, as much as I am not really into hardcore anymore, going to that show and running into people I haven't seen in a long time was pretty great. Seeing Michael Jackson and Adit and Zach was awesome. Hanging out with Mark Miller was awesome. I don't think I spent more than 20 minutes watching any bands. I watched Mark's band and I watched Chad's band. Bane played. I know that happened because a lot of people were out of the room and then they came back in. But that's the only reason I know they played. And because I saw the members selling skateboards and tote bags.
Skateboards and tote bags in their merch table?
They had so much weird. They had like can openers and... like microwaves and stuff. They had all kinds of stuff.
Like wicker
spatulas.
Chairs.
They're like, we have Bane lawn furniture.
Papasans.
It's like even Metallica knows when to, you know, end it. But just hanging out with everybody was awesome. And I was like, I should come outside more often because that's not the worst thing ever. Especially now that I'm like gray hair and getting older. I'm going to need people to meet at Dunkin' Donuts with on Saturday mornings to complain about the damn kids and their hula hoops or whatever we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was pretty rad. I stayed way longer than I expected, and I still hate the city of Chicago with a passion, and I wish they would fix the potholes and get rid of the rats and clean up the traffic and get rid of all the weird jogging people, but I mean...
It's changed so much.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in, like, one big giant Chipotle when I'm in the city now. It's the worst.
Actually, whatever they're doing to Seattle, Damien, they're doing the same thing here. Or they actually have been. And it sounds like they're just starting to do it in Seattle, what Chicago's been doing since, like, 98, pretty much.
Yeah, I drove through, like, 1 mile stretch of Lawrence Avenue that felt like Chicago. Everything else felt like Schaumburg. And I felt like, oh, here's a Starbucks and another Starbucks and a Fifth Third Bank and a Potbelly. This town is the worst.
Oh, yeah, dude. When I was at, what was that street? You know where the Diversity Rockin' Bowl is? Remember, Brian?
Yeah, they actually have bowling there now. It's super weird.
No, but as we're driving through there, I'm driving through there with a D and stuff, and I'm just talking about how, like, the city's changed so much. Because at that Diversity Bowl, like, right over the bridge, right over the Chicago River, is that ghetto. As we're driving through it, I'm like, Chicago would really do anything to gentrify, you know, the town. And I'm like, look, they probably, like, the building planners probably get together or whatever, and they're sitting down, they're like, okay, so how can we get all of these Mexicans and other people out of here? Let's put in Vitamin Shop and David's Bridal.
Nice.
Yeah, the city is definitely not what it was at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if stuff like that's exactly happening here, but it's, you know, this is where Starbucks came from, so I sort of apologize to what's happening in Chicago, because I know Starbucks are like little gentrification bombs they throw into a neighborhood, and all of a sudden, you know, the white people feel safe to go there.
Yeah, ridiculous. It isn't your fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. Actually,
no, just joking.
To be honest, I do like Starbucks.
I was gonna say Brian is a coffee connoisseur.
Oh, I can only drink decaf coffee because my heart. My doctor says I shouldn't drink caffeinated, so I just go to Starbucks because they're everywhere. I know what I'm gonna get, and to me, if it's decaffeinated, it pretty much all tastes the same. So, I mean, there's every so often if I sneak like a. If I'm like, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to have a tiny, real cup of coffee. I'll go to one of, like, the much nicer kind of, I wouldn't say high-end, but just, like, really nice, legit coffee shops that we have. But in general, Starbucks works completely fine for me. It's always, like, especially for being a band from Seattle, like, the way Starbucks kind of works here is it's the worst coffee in Seattle and the best coffee outside of Seattle. So when you're most people in Seattle, they would never go to Starbucks, but the second they get to, like, an airport in another city, they're just like, oh, thank God there's a Starbucks.
It's funny you mentioned decaf. Brian, who's the guy that does the late show, one of the late shows, I forgot, they're on Channel 2, but he's the one that's like he's had like comic book writers on before. Isn't it Seth something?
Seth Meyer?
Isn't that him?
Yeah, he's had like Matt Fraction on, and I think
Well,
Joe Quesada.
Have you ever seen his show? He does this like, I forgot what this little bit that he does, like one of his little skits, but like I was watching it one time and he had one. Where he had said decaffeinated coffee, and he goes, make it pointless, make it decaf.
Pretty much.
He goes, I like the way it makes my breath smell.
I know.
And I, you know, it's like, I get it, because, like, most people drink coffee to, like, wake themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you drink decaf, and I'm not, I understand, Damien, that, like, your heart, and, you know, I'm not saying anything about that, but like, you know, for majority of people, they drink it to get that caffeine, so I assume if someone drinks decaffeinated, it's like, why are you even bothering, dude?
I know. I mean, honestly, if I hadn't drank coffee for most of my life, I probably wouldn't, but it's like, it's just a ritual now. It's like something I have
to
do.
You'd like the taste of it, too, so obviously.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll get, sometimes I'm getting milk, too, I'll have it be like soy, because I don't drink a lot of dairy, and I'm thinking like, wow, I'm having fake coffee with fake milk. Like.
My best thing ever. I guess our floors got done in our house, so I mean that's that was really good.
That's
exciting.
That's
can you slide around on them now like Risky Business?
No, I can't. It'd be kind of hard to slide on porcelain.
Well, if you figure that out, let me know.
Yeah. Well, we had to pick out our tiles this past Saturday because the guys were coming into the house to install them. So we did that Saturday, and then the next day, Sunday, I went and carried 2 tons of it into the house.
That sounds awful.
I wish I had that song from, what's that? Is it Orgasmo? That now you're a man. A man, man, man.
Those things are heavy, dude. Like, if you buy any kind of, like, ceramic tiles or whatever, I mean, the ones we had were 60 by 40 inches, 6 inches by 40 inches, and there was 8 of them in a box. And they had 2 boxes binded together, so that's 16 pieces. So I figured it, like, I was doing the math to try and figure it out, so it was, like, pretty much, like, one of those boxes of 8 was 50 pounds. Just slightly over. So it was 100 pounds, and I had to lift that 21 times.
Oh, man.
So do the math. 21 times 100.
210. I got nothing.
2100.
Yeah, I know.
So you lifted a ton.
Well, isn't a ton 1,000 pounds, right?
2,000.
A ton is 2,000?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So I lifted, regardless, it was a ton then.
That is the best thing ever.
But they're done, and the floors look cool.
That's cool.
Right on. Where's my phone?
I'm excited to come over and spill stuff all over the place.
Oh, go ahead. It'll be easy cleanup. Do you want to live in the room off? You know, I can make your dream of being in Elmhurst a reality.
That would be my dream. I can get up and walk to Starbucks in my slippers on Saturday morning.
That sounds awesome.
Probably could.
All right. Well, I guess I'll do mine real quick, so then we can go. My friend Carl, my coworker and buddy Carl, he's awesome. He's from San Francisco. He's the framer that we hired about a year ago, maybe a little longer. And he's just like this superstar. He came in and he's able to like take care of everything. Any weird framing project, he's done it. He's framed as long as I have, but he's worked at all these different like high-end shops and done all this crazy stuff. So he came in and was like a perfect replacement for me because I was going to start working in our letterpress shop and I wasn't going to do much framing anymore. Anyway, this guy can do anything. And he can like fix electronic stuff too, and he fixed my bass player's bass. Shane, the guy from Indiana. If you ever seen him or heard about him, he's crazy, and he breaks shit constantly. And he busted his bass, and Carl fixed that bass, and it looks gorgeous and it's amazing. And then I had mentioned that I had like a huge suitcase full of effects pedals that I've had for like the past 15 years, and they're all broken, but they're all good pedals. He's like, "Well, why don't you let me take a look at them?" And like in 3 days, he had fixed all of them, all these things that I hadn't had working for anywhere between like 15 years ago to like a few weeks ago. He went through and fixed every single one, like opened them up.
Electronic guru.
Yeah, I think he just understands how things work. Like it makes sense to him. So he's like, "Oh, if that's doing that and that's doing, oh, there must be a problem here. Oh, there it is. Fix it. Done." And I was like, "Dude, what can I give you? I'll give you money, or you can have the pedals or whatever. I don't know. Like, what do you want?" And he's like, "No, don't worry about it." I ended up forcing him to take like my old, beautiful Holy Grail reverb pedal because I don't need it because I have one. I have a reverb pedal already. But so he took that in trade, but basically fixed like, 12 or 13 pedals that are all great and I miss them a lot.
Nice.
So Carl rules.
Carl is the best.
Yes. Carl Toomey, he's related to Toomey Wineries in some way, too. Some Irish wine company. There you go.
That's weird. Irish wine.
Well, they're an Irish family that have a winery in, whatchamacallit, in
Italy?
No, in California, like whatever.
Napa Valley?
Yes, Napa Valley.
So how good of friends is he with Paul Giamatti?
I don't know. Probably not very good.
Damn.
Probably never met him before. But if he had, he probably fixed something for him, and it was awesome.
Man, if he could have met Paul Giamatti and Thomas Hayden Church, then I could have been in Sideways 2.
Sideways 2?
Electric Boogaloo.
Sidewaysier.
and then your life would be a lot different.
Yeah.
Did you like that movie, Sideways?
Oh, I love that movie.
I watch it all the time.
It's like I wanted. Do you remember The Office where Dwight says he's going to go to New Zealand and walk the trail to Mordor?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to San Diego and drive the trail that Thomas Hayden Church and Paul Giamatti took in that movie. I don't know if that's a thing, but I want it to be one.
It can be.
Yeah,
I love the very beginning where he wakes up late and he's like, I'll be there in 20 minutes. I'm just out the door. And the next scene, he's like sitting on the toilet reading.
I have to watch that movie now that we've been talking about it because it's been like a couple of years now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like I said, I watch it all the time. Probably it's not like exactly on the level of Groundhog Day with me where I watch it like every other month, but I definitely watch it like two or three times a year. Love Sideways.
Sideways is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, I like Alexander Payne's movies pretty much universally.
Yeah, yeah, those are all. They've all so far been pretty solid.
Yeah. All right, so I guess that'll wrap it up for this week.
That's it, yeah.
Once again, Brian, Pure Rock Fury on Twitter. You can find Damian on Twitter at Damian Johnston. You can find Chris on Twitter at SkateXEdge. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook.
iTunes.
We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher, et cetera, and whatnot. If you haven't listened to the interview with Dan Doherty from Beardo Comics from last week, go back and do that because Dan's a super talented guy, and when he's as big as Joe Quesada, then we can say that we talked to him once. So there's that. So
and
thank
you. Can go back even further and listen to the interview with Bob Fingerman.
Then you can also do that. And Bob Sweet. Fingerman should be as big as, who did I say?
Joe Quesada.
He should be bigger than Joe Quesada. Joe Quesada has been on the Colbert Report multiple times. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.